The views and opinions expressed by guests on the TWBC podcast are solely those of the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views of nor constitute an endorsement by the host, TWBC, or the advertisers.
National championships, Confederation championships, World championships, major professional events. For over three decades, he has been there for many of the sport's greatest moments. And now he brings you even closer to the movers and shakers in the world of high echelon tournament water skiing. From the founder and creator of the Water Ski Broadcasting Company comes the TWBC Podcast. And now here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and indeed a season's greetings to every single one of you out there. This is the latest edition of the TWBC Podcast. I am the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot, and this interview that we got coming up is a rather special one. It's one that I've wanted to do for quite a while, but for one reason or another, and we'll go into those reasons, the person who ended up being earmarked for the interview was either unavailable or unfortunately having to deal with one or two on water incidents, and that person is Whitney McClintock-Reaney. How you doing?
I'm doing much better now, thanks, Tony.
Okie dokie. We'll make reference to that little spill that you took at the World Championships a little bit later on. So, Whitney McClintock-Reaney. That name, McClintock, so important to so many people, especially in Canada. How important is that name to you in the grand scheme of things?
Well, when I got married, I didn't get rid of my last name. I made it my middle name. So McClintock has always been super important to me. Obviously, I was born into a family of water skiers and world champion water skiers. I just watched it all happen as I was growing up. So the lineage in Canada to be a world champion when your name is McClintock was very important in my family. So my dad pushed us really hard when we were young, and then we kind of took the reins when we were teenagers to train as hard as we could to make the family proud and become world champions. And when I was 19, I got to continue that trend and become a world champion. And yeah, that's just what the McClintock name means to my family. It's synonymous to me with world champion water skiers.
All right then. Okay. So yeah, extremely important, and also extremely important to have an off season training regimen, which you are in the throes of right now. I mean, you're taking some time out a little bit because the weather wasn't quite cooperating today. But how important is it for you to continue on beyond November and into the season coming up?
Well, it's interesting because the last couple of years I've had a unique situation going into fall and into the off season. 2 years ago I was pregnant. Last year I had a brand new baby, and I just physically couldn't. I was trying to get my body back. I was trying to sleep. I was like, it was. So I did take an off season, an extended off season for the last 2 years. And now this being the third year in a row, I'm taking an extended off season because of my injury in October. It ended up keeping me off the water a lot longer than I anticipated. And so right now I'm just kind of trying to be in the gym as much as I can. And I'm starting to ski a little bit, but the weather's been cold and it's been windy, and now it's raining today on a day that I was planning on skiing. So I'm not stressed about it. I had one of the best seasons of my life this past season. Mm-hmm. So I know that whatever I've been doing is working. And when it gets warm, I'm kind of like a reptile. Like I'm solar powered. So when the sun's out and it's really nice, I'm super ambitious to be out there. And when it's cold, I'm super not ambitious to be out there. So I do find that it's important for me to get back out there just a little bit right now, just to get back on my ski, kind of dust my shoulders off and, try and get back in the course a little bit before I completely shut down for the winter, when it actually is going to be extendedly cold. But I have had seasons too where I train all winter long. This season, before the 2009 World Championships, I was skiing when it was like 40 degrees out, and I don't think anybody else was. That was a really cold winter in Florida, and just things change though. I mean, at this point, with only doing one event, I don't feel like it's quite as crucial for me to be skiing when it's freezing. So, yeah.
Well, I've skied a little bit in the winter myself. In fact, I skied quite a bit in England during the winter where we had to break off the ice. I'm sure that your husband, Matt, will probably tell you all about those situations whenever he was training some of the athletes in England around about that time. But we'll move on from there, and let's address the World Championships, specifically the spill that you took, which is probably one of the gnarliest slalom spills we've ever seen taken, and the subsequent injury that was sustained. Tell us a little bit about that, because I mean, we didn't get the full SP type deal. I mean, we got like the brief Cliff Notes version. But how have you dealt with it since then?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want me to walk through the actual crash,
please do.
Yeah. So I was feeling really good coming into the Worlds. I had come off of a couple of wins. I was skiing really, really well the weekend of the Open up in South Carolina. Was like the most epic women's slalom finals, and I ended up on the top of the podium. And so I was feeling really good coming into the Worlds. Right after I ran 39, I was like pumped up and ready to get to three ball at 41. And I just, in my head leading up to the Worlds, I knew it was going to take getting to three ball to win. I was like, Janie's going to get two at her home lake. Like, for sure she's going to get two. So, of course, me and my preliminary got to win, got to be top seed against Regina self, come around one ball. I knew it wasn't quite a great one ball, so I tried to get my shoulder down so I could get to two. I was going to get to two if I didn't put my shoulder down quite as hard. So I just caused this like huge bungee cord reaction. Like, I stretched the rope way too hard, spiked it, and it just pulled me right back. And I can't say that I've ever experienced what I did. In my head, when I put my shoulder down, I was like, I'm either going to end up on shore or I need to let go.
Oh, yeah. Just to clarify, what rope were you skiing on? Were you skiing on the normal or were you skiing on the optimized rope?
I was skiing on the gray.
The optimized.
That's another thing that we had been switching back and forth because we heard that the rope was not going, we weren't going to have the option of having the optimized rope at the Worlds. So I had been skiing on the black rope. And then I had one set in practice again with the gray rope, which is way stretchier, but we like it. The feeling on our bodies is, to me, it feels better typically when I train behind it. But I only had two sets on it before the Worlds, and I had not tried 41 on it. And I really do think that when I threw my shoulder down, it was my reaction to the black rope, and then I got the spring reaction from the gray rope, which it's kind of designed to do, is to spring back, but it can be loaded way stronger. So with all that being said, I still prefer skiing on that rope. It was just not enough practice at that super short rope before the Worlds. Anyway, I end up springing the line a little bit too hard and getting that recoil, and landed on my face harder than I ever have. Ended up fracturing my orbital socket. So like my eyeball, the pressure in my eyeball caused the socket to blow out down into my cheek. So I thought originally that I actually broke my cheekbone. It wasn't. It was my actual eye socket. It's called a blowout fracture.
Wow.
If you want to Google it and look at it. But so that's why my eye got super black. It was bleeding. I got disoriented immediately. When you watch the video, you can see I floundered in the water for about 6 to 10 seconds.
And oh, yeah.
I think our reaction, I think normally as water skiers, when we are under the water, we look for the light just instinctually with our eyes. And I couldn't find the light. I remember specifically, like, why can't I find the sun? Like, I don't know where it is. And I thought my arm was under the water. So when I actually watched the video back, it's super weird to me because from where I was inside of that situation, I thought my arm was underwater and I thought I was going to be turning myself over. But I wasn't turning over when I was doing that, and I just kept putting my arm outside the water. And I'm like, that's so weird that I can't, like, flip over. But I'm like, okay, well, you're going to die if you can't, like, if you don't just stop and do something different. So I stopped, and that's immediately when I just picked my head up, which is, like, scariest experience of my life. I had lots of tears about it later on. When I was in the CT scan at the hospital later, I kept thinking about it. And when I came back out, I said, Matt, I thought I was going to die. I really did think I was going to die. And now, like, when I actually watched it, it was very therapeutic for me. So I'm really thankful that TWBC was there videoing it, because watching it, I counted the seconds. It's really only 6 seconds that I had my head under the water, but it felt like an eternity that I was under there. And I felt like I was just gasping for air. And obviously there was no air under there, but I remember, like, taking breaths and thinking, like, you can't take a breath right now. Like, you can't. You need to get your face up. Anyway, so it was a very scary experience. And then the first person I saw when I actually did put my face up was Greg Disfond. And I was just so thankful for him, because he was on the other side of the lake at Two Ball watching and taking photos over there. And he ended up being the first person to get to me when the boat actually got to me. So had I not gotten my head out of the water, someone was going to be there for me, you know, to get me out. And the boat crew hopped in, and my eyeball was bleeding. So they were all kind of freaking out and panicking. And I just remember getting into the boat, like, super slowly, because I was fine, just a little disoriented, obviously. But I don't remember being in, like, a super amount of pain, but, like, my head was obviously ringing a little bit.
Wow.
But I got on the back of the boat slowly. We went back, and then I remember going to the dock, and I made eye contact with Dana Garcia, and she had, like, this terrified look on her face.
Wow.
She was coming out to greet, and then I get to the dock, and Matt is terrified too. And I'm like, why is everyone so worried? I'm fine, you know, like, I just can't open my eye, like, I'm fine. And then we got out of the boat, and I got, like, checked out by the medical crew.
Yeah.
And the medical crew, I remember them asking me all the questions, like, what day is it? Who's the president? Where are we? What are you doing? I answered all the questions, no problem.
Yeah.
And then we transferred up to a blanket where I just kind of held my baby, and we, like, chilled out for a little bit. Because my head was – and my eye was disorienting me. Like, my eyeball being smashed, I felt like was just, like, throwing me for a loop. I felt super nauseous for a little while. And I had really bad double vision if I opened my eye. And so I just kept it closed, and I just chilled with Zane. And Matt was like, we need to get you to the hospital. We need to get you to the hospital. So eventually we get to the hospital. They did the CT scan of my face, which discovered that I had this orbital fracture. They said there was no blood on the brain or anything like that, and no one said anything about a concussion. So I just assumed I had passed all the questions with the concussion, and I thought I was good to go. Well, with the orbital fracture and having double vision, they sent me by ambulance to a different hospital to get checked by a specialist, thinking that I was probably going to need surgery that night on the orbit of my eye. Because if that double vision doesn't go away, you need to get surgery.
Yeah.
Thankfully, my vision came back within a couple of hours. I got discharged from the hospital, and I thought I was ready to ski 2 days later.
You thought you were anyway, but then what happened after the opening pass in the finals?
Yeah, so even the warm-up, I was like, okay, that whole morning, Saturday morning, I was like, can't not go. So I had to be at the lake and I had to give myself the opportunity. I had to warm up and like go through. My head was not hurting. Like literally they wanted to give me pills when I got to the hospital. Like, you need a painkiller? I'm like, no, I'm fine. Like I just gave birth, you know, it was 14 months ago or whatever. I wasn't on any painkillers for that. I'm fine. And so I really only had Advil the 2 days for the pain management. It was like very little pain. So I was like, I can ski. I'll just take an Advil and I'll go get ready because my body feels perfect. And my vision was a little bit weird because of my eye. But I warmed up. I did all the things. And I did have a little bit of double vision still in my high gaze, which I still have because had I gotten the surgery, they said they could have possibly fixed that. But I didn't. I decided not to get the surgery at all. So in normal gaze, I don't have double vision. And anyway, so I was just warming up and I was like, okay, I'll just like take my time. I really was thinking if it gets to having to run 39, I'm not sure that I'll be able to win. And if I can't win, I don't think it's worth competing.
Yeah.
Because like, I don't know I hadn't really talked to a specialist about my eye. If I fell again, what are the repercussions? Like, does my freaking eye go into my brain? I don't know. Like I was thinking the most extreme thoughts about my eye and I was just afraid for that. I got cleared from the chief judge. I was not diagnosed with a concussion. The eye, we weren't really sure, but the black eye was clearing up pretty quickly. And I just said to Matt, I was like, well, I can go try. And if I don't feel right, I'll just stop. So the first pass, I felt fine physically.
And this was at 13 meters.
13 meters. I felt like I couldn't turn 135 properly. And I was like, I've been doing like really, it's been easy, obviously, to run 32 off. I've been running 39 pretty much every set, you know? So I was like, okay, well, that was kind of weird that I couldn't turn my ski. And then at 35, at the end of 32, we stopped in the water and the boat crew was like, looking at me like, are you okay? Do you want to keep going? And I was like, I'm fine. I'll do another pass. And if I don't feel like I can run 38 and 39, I'm not going to shorten to them because it's not worth the risk to me.
Yeah.
But I said, I want to keep going right now. So we come out around into the course again, and I still didn't turn one ball. And I was like, what the heck? Like, that is so weird that I can't turn today. And then when I came into two ball, because I didn't turn one ball, I was just a little bit narrow. And this just like horrible thought went through my head. Like, what if I hit the ball and I smash my face and what happened, you know?
Yeah.
And it only takes a split second when you're skiing to lose your focus. And that was it. And that's when I came inside of, I don't know if I was even outside of two ball or not, at 35. And then I think I was scored 1.5.
Because it would only take a minor hit at that point to really exacerbate what you were going through at that time, right?
Possibly. But the crazy thing is, Tony, I felt fine. And the adrenaline of the weekend really was keeping me going, knowing that I was going to ski again. So after that, like the next morning, felt like I got hit by a truck. Like I couldn't open my eyes. I couldn't get out of bed. I had to get Matt to come get the baby. Like, I couldn't move. I was completely destroyed. And to me, that's when my real like recovery started, was after the finals, because my body wasn't allowing it to go into like healing mode. I was totally in an adrenaline rush for 2 days.
Wow.
That's what I realized now. So, a week later, I was going to go ski at the tournament at Fluid, and they didn't give me, because they weren't going to give me my money back. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll go. I took a week off, or 10 days, something like that. And I was like, Matt, I'm going to ski because they're not going to give me my money back. I'll ski in that tournament and just get my money back. Well, the first time I tried to ski at our house, I could not turn one ball. I was like terrified to pull, to turn, to do anything. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll just free ski a couple passes. So I free skied a couple passes. Then I tried to ski in the course, still nothing. So that was it. I was like, you know what? I'll just go in and try this another day. I'm not going to ski at the tournament this weekend. And when I went in is when I actually started feeling concussion symptoms. And I didn't realize what it was because I had been dealing with this eye and all of this weird stuff associated with my vision and my head, but I was attributing everything to my eye socket. And then it turns out I was saying like, whoa, I feel like I'm 6 feet tall right now. Like I'm floating. And Taryn was like, that could be a concussion. You should talk to our team doctor. Mm-hmm. So I did. And that's actually the day I got diagnosed with a concussion. Because nobody told me that a CT scan will always be clear with a concussion. Somehow I was able to pass, like I didn't have any memory loss. I didn't have any loss of consciousness. I didn't have any headaches, really. I didn't have any of the telltale symptoms that I had ever seen with anybody who I had like been around getting a concussion. And so thankfully, Taryn, my expert in concussions, was able to, well, she's had a couple in a day. And she was able to help me figure out that that was actually a concussion. And I mean, it's not surprising that I did have a concussion, but what was surprising to me is how long it took to figure it out that, and to get diagnosed. Because in regular life, I didn't have anything weird. And then since then, I really have tried to stay on this side of symptoms. That's what the doctor told me to do. So he said, if you get any of those weird visual effects, don't do whatever you just did. So it has taken about 8 weeks to get back on the water and not have symptoms. And if I had to have like a crazy big day, and I'm just free skiing right now. So I'm being very careful. Being in the gym is totally fine. I can go pretty much as hard as I want in the gym, but on the water, I'm having to go super careful and not do much because it's not worth the risk of having another fall.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at right now. And that's just over two months out from the Worlds. So it's a serious thing. And I never realized how serious a concussion is until you experience one. And I didn't realize how hard it is to diagnose.
So what you're basically saying, so the gist of what you're saying is that the original scan didn't register as a concussion, but subsequent more thorough testing later revealed that a concussion had actually come into play long after the diagnosis of the exploded eye socket type deal.
Correct. So the eye socket was diagnosed with the CT scan, and I thought they were also checking my brain for blood on my brain or something like that for the concussion symptom or the concussion diagnosis. But a CT scan apparently does not show concussion. And I don't know how they would diagnose it any other way than the way it was for me, because I really had to ski in order to get the symptoms, because daily life was totally fine. And my eye socket was causing such weird symptoms for me that it was masking the concussion symptoms as well, because of the visual side effects of the eye socket too.
It sounds like you need to be a study of a sports medicine class going down the line, I guess. I don't know, some lessons to be learned there.
Yeah.
But the season was more than just the World Championships, of course. I mean much of what you were doing this past season was a slow recovery from having given birth to Zane and all the stuff that took place afterwards, and that kind of culminated in the pro tournament in Charleston, where not one but two but three but four people, including yourself, gone into 41 off in the final, which is remarkable and really, really illustrates how women's slalom has come along in leaps and bounds in recent years.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, starting this season, I was thinking, okay, the bounce back should be fine. Like, I'll be running 39 by May for the Masters. And then, you know, it'll just go from there. But it turns out that it was it almost felt like that first year that I ever ran 39, it was just like every week me trying to push to try and get through that pass. And I thought for sure I was going to do it at the US Open, at the Nationals. And I ended up winning that one, but it was like Oh, okay. Well, okay, great. I won, but I didn't accomplish the goal of running 39 still. So then when I finally did that at California, I can't remember if I ran it at Hilltop. I was trying to think of that last night, but then I started running it way more consistently, in California, and I was like, all right, this is good. Like, finally, I feel confident, leading into the last couple tournaments. And I was not gonna go to Charleston, and because one, it was my birthday weekend, and two, it was like 10 days before the Worlds, and I'm like, oh, my whole crew decided not to go to Charleston. Like, everyone from our ski school was like, no, it's too soon, but we've got Paige doing overall, so it didn't really make sense for her to go, not trick for the weekend. And then Taryn was like, yeah, it's a little weird there with the different boat and the setup there, so she wasn't going to go jump. And then we had Joel, same thing. Like, everyone from our crew like had a reason not to go. So I'm like, well, should I go? Should I not? And I just couldn't shake the feeling I had to go, which I'm really happy I did now, because I got to witness and be a part of the most epic women's slalom final. And I had already been part of the last most epic women's slalom final at the US Open down in Okeehealy, whatever year that was, where three of us ran 39 in the finals. So I was actually top seed in Charleston too. So I got to watch Jamie go run two, and she was at three ball. And I was like, holy smokes, this is so exciting. So she starts it off, and then Manon runs it, and then Regina runs it. And I was like, well,
Game on.
cool. This is really, really exciting. And when I got in the water, I said to the boat crew, I was like, well, there's no losers today, right? And then I thought, like, and then this thought went through my head, oh, but if you don't run it, then you're the loser. So I was like, well, I got to run it too.
Got to keep up with the
And
Joneses.
yes, it was, I mean, just being part of that final was a huge honor. And to come out on the top of the podium with a tie with Jamie and then have to go out in the runoff, I mean, the whole thing was super exciting. And I can't say that I skied the best, technically, because I was fighting for my every turn in the final in the runoff. But actually, the runoff was good for me because there's a reset, but in the final I was kind of like fighting for every buoy. And and then the runoff, I was actually a little bit more confident going out with it was just Jamie and me, and it being a tailwind, actually 39, I felt confident that I was going to win at that point.
Well, I mean, it was certainly one of the tournaments for the ages. So congrats to you on that and being part of
Thank
that
you.
deal. And you briefly mentioned Paige there for a moment, in regards to skiing to the Malibu. Obviously, there's a tight-knit group between you and Paige and Joel and one or two others
Aaron, yeah.
that are part of that group at Matt Rennie's. But I would like to key in a little bit on your stepdaughter, Paige.
Yeah.
And because that is a real interesting dynamic to me, because obviously you come into the situation, obviously marrying Matt and everything and having Zane and what have you. And normally whenever stepmom comes into the equation, it doesn't present a typically desirable situation, I mean, in the typical family dynamic. But what is the dynamic between you and Paige? I mean, are you kind of like besties training with each other and all of that kind of stuff?
I mean, I wouldn't say that we're besties, but she has a really, really good relationship with Matt. She always has. And with Zane now, she has an amazing relationship with Zane. So I come to the lake, and Paige and Robert are there to hang out with Zane while I ski. And I mean, I've been there watching her ski, cheering her on. And I mean, from my perspective, I'm able to like be a super huge supporter of Paige, and I want her to do really well. There's been a couple of instances at international competitions, especially in like a couple years ago at the Pan Am Games, where she actually got a trick medal that usually would have been mine had she not been there. But I mean, that's the way this sport works. I mean, you're not going to be on top forever. You're not going to be the best on your team forever. And the way it goes is the next generation is supposed to get better than you. So it's been a really good experience for me to watch her and see how well she's doing. With tricking, she passed me right at the very end of my tricking career. So I felt really good about her coming up and kind of taking my place on the team as far as tricking is concerned. Her jumping has taken leaps and bounds this year, so it's really cool to see her overall stepping up since I stepped down.
I like the pun, by the way.
What did I say?
You said in leaps and bounds.
Oh, well, there you go. With her slalom, I mean, she is a super strong slalomer as well, and she's just getting stronger. I think having Robert in her life is really good for her slaloming and her skiing in general. Just Robert has a really competitive attitude when it comes to skiing. So with Matt's technical expertise and with Robert, like his new input in her life, she's skiing really well, and I'm really excited to see what the future brings for her. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm a huge Paige fan, and I can't wait to see. The sky's the limit for her because she's super dedicated, one of the most dedicated athletes I've ever met in water skiing. She's always ready to ski way more times than anybody else at the ski school. And so she has pushed me too over the years. Like before Malaysia that season, I really wanted to keep up with Paige, how many times she was skiing, because I knew she was getting better. And in order for me to win that world, I felt like I had to get better. So she's been awesome to have as a training buddy. And she's going to continue to do great things in the sport.
Of course. And that was obviously a contributing factor to the fact that Paige scored the bronze medal in the World Overall Championship. And on top of all of that, Canada winning through in the team competition for the second time in a row, which must really delight you in great leaps and bounds as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when I fell in the prelims in slalom, at least I had given 1,000 points for the team. That was my, like, at least. I was supposed to be tricking at the Worlds. I don't know if you knew that, but I was, my name was on the list. I was supposed to be tricking the next day. And I had been training. I was going to do maybe 8,000, maybe 8,500 if I was lucky. With me not being able to trick, I was just praying that Dorian, Neely, and Paige all did their thing, because I was that fourth, like, backup trick score for our team. And they all killed it and did amazing. And, I mean, the whole team just did so, so, so well that we really couldn't have asked for much more from the team. Paige got a personal best in jump. Dorian is just an amazing athlete. I mean, that kid is following in his father's footsteps and making the pants bigger.
Yeah, I mean, he was only like about two and a half meters shy of actually gaining the World Overall Championship himself, you know, so.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's going to continue to lead this team for years and years. And with Paige's strong overall, I mean, she didn't even have her very best overall round. She really wanted to win the Worlds, and she just, I mean, her slalom came up way shorter than she wanted to at this Worlds. And I think it's an awesome, huge first accomplishment to get her bronze medal at the Worlds, but I know that she wants to win one day. So
absolutely, and we sort of look forward to seeing her produce. Now, obviously, family being very, very important to you, obviously you have your husband Matt, but Zane this season he's been an absolute revelation on the skiing scene. His happy-go-lucky attitude. But the one photo that I saw this season was him resting on your chest while you were trying to recover from that. And I think that was probably one of the most telling photos that I saw this season.
After my crash, you said?
Yeah.
At the World. See, I haven't seen a photo of it, but as soon as I came in, I hadn't seen him in a couple hours because he was napping and I was getting ready to ski. And then our normal routine is lots of breastfeeding and nursing. And so with me going to the hospital, I I knew it was important for him to get his milk and for me to just chill for a little bit. So that's what we did after I was done skiing. And my mother-in-law actually said, she's like, Whitney, you are a champion. Like, this is what you're doing. You know, I don't know. To me, being a mom is 10 times more important than any world championships now.
You're making me cry. I don't know about you, but you're making me cry.
I've had a lot of great success this season, and I had a lot of times where I came in super frustrated. Like at the Masters, I was super frustrated, but I come off the water, and he's always there, and he's always smiling, and he's always ready to love me. So, yeah, I mean, he's amazing. He's just like, he lights up the room everywhere he goes. Everyone loves Zane. So I'm just super blessed to be his mama.
All righty then. I think I think we're pretty much done with the interview. It's it went on a little bit longer than anticipated for, but I mean, we had a lot of ground to cover, and obviously I'm gonna whenever we shut down the interview, there's probably going to be one or two questions I wish I would have asked of that, but we'll probably have some time to recap to catch up in the next season. Speaking to that. I mean, you're trying to get back into slalom shape and everything, you know, just trying to get everything going on there. But is there anything else you got going on as you get prepared for 2022?
Nope. I mean, just working out at New Dimensions. I love it there. They help me to feel good and get stronger. So that's what I'm doing this winter, focusing on that, and continue hanging out with Zane.
Absolutely. So, all right, then we'll wrap it up around about here. Thank you very much for taking the time out. Is there anything you want to say to cap off the interview by way of thanks, acknowledgements, all that kind of stuff to your family, friends, and fans that are not only across the United States and Canada, but also across the world?
Yeah, for sure. All of those things. I mean, my immediate family is super supportive of me. Obviously, my extended family sends me notes when I compete, and they're watching on TWBC has made it super easy for everybody to watch the pro events this season. So that's awesome. My sponsors, Nautique, Radar, ASEA, Redox Molecules, they actually helped me recover quite well. Performance Skiing Surf is always there for me too. So, I mean, I have an amazing group of people who support me, and water skiing is not something that you can do alone. So I need all the family support, all the fans reaching out. And really, my fans encourage me. When I post stuff on Facebook and Instagram and I really like post from my heart, it's revolutionary sometimes when people respond and like kind of help me get through these hard times. So, anyway, I just appreciate everybody. I appreciate you, Tony, and your dedication to our sport and helping it be as good as it can be and showing it off to the world.
Oh, shucks. There you go. But there you go. Anyway. Yep. That was Whitney McClintock-Greeny. My name's Tony Lightfoot. That brings to a conclusion this episode of the TWBC podcast. And so until next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.